The carpet industry says about 2 million tons of carpet, which is about 70% plastic made from fossil fuels. So that's 1.2 plus million tons of plastic carpet is thrown away every year. And it is more than every plastic bag, plastic water bottle, and plastic straw the U.S. throws out combined every year. That's one product.
Welcome to Buzz House, a Baker-Tilly podcast where you can hear all the buzz around multifamily housing with all the info you need to help you win now and anticipate tomorrow. Hi, I'm Don Bernards, the partner in charge of Baker-Tilly's multifamily housing practice.
And I'm Gary Gibson, a partner at Baker-Tilly, also specializing in consulting on multifamily housing transactions across the country.
Let's get started. Back in August of 2023, we had Gina Saganik join us to discuss healthy building products, building options for developers of multifamily projects, and what it takes to cultivate a healthier environment. Gina is the Chief Executive Officer of Healthy Building Network, an organization that helps to define the leading edge of healthy building practices that increase transparency in the building products industry and to reduce human exposures to hazardous materials and chemicals. We are very excited to have Gina back on the show to talk about the results of a study that she had alluded to back in August when we had her in the Buzz House. And this study really talks about the impact of Minnesota's affordable housing sector. That was kind of the subsection, if you will, and she'll get into that a little bit, on human health and equity via the types of building products used in housing development, and quite frankly, how these products affect the planet. So we're very excited to jump into this discussion with Gina. Gina, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Gina, for those maybe who didn't listen the first time, or just maybe a reminder about your background and a little bit about your organization.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Prior to joining Healthy Building Network, I spent about two decades as a real estate developer developing thousands of units of affordable housing and was particularly interested in figuring out how to do it more sustainably. So back then, we were talking more about energy efficiency, carbon a little bit, I guess, back then, water efficiency, some things like that. And I started to realize that the products we were using in our building, first of all, took a lot of energy to create. And they also were full of a lot of chemicals we didn't know a lot about as developers and architects. And I got very interested in how we could add that into the sustainability realm. So I started working at Healthy Building Network about 8 years ago. And our team is full of researchers and scientists, material scientists, and folks who evaluate the full life cycle of all the products that we use. So I like to say that when I was a real estate developer, I used to think about 50,000 square feet or 100,000 square feet of a building at a single time. Now I'm thinking about the 2.5 trillion square feet of real estate that is being projected to be added to the earth by 2060, which will double everything that we have today. So, well, first of all, let's not build that much. Let's figure out how to rehab and build more sustainably in all the ways, but making sure that as we build and rehab, we do it in a healthier way. One of the exciting things that's going to be happening with Healthy Building Network in the coming weeks is we have always worked on issues that were beyond the building. We always recognize that the scale of the built environment hits the health of the planet and the planetary boundaries conversations. And so we wanted to make sure people understood the wider breadth of our work. And we'll be rebranding and changing our name from Healthy Building Network to Habitable. And the idea of Habitable is that, you know, a space that's habitable could be at a planetary level, your community level, a building level, but the spaces that we inhabit at whichever level need to be free of contamination, free of toxic chemicals, free of pollution. So this idea that habitable, as we will be called soon, we can help our partners and our peers make changes that are going to improve the habitability of all of the different spaces we interact with.
Perfect. Thank you, Gina. Gina, maybe just, you know, kind of getting into, let's, you know, really kind of big picture first. And maybe some of this is a little bit self-explanatory, but why do these results matter? Why this specific study?
Yeah, thanks. So our team looked at affordable housing here in Minnesota, about 36 projects, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I would say the most important reason is knowledge is power. Until we know information, we can't make change. And that was my experience. And when I was doing my last project, The Rose, here in Minnesota, and worked on the Living Building Challenge as our inspiration for our Green Building Standard, I didn't know a lot of these things. But once I did, I was able to think about how to be more successful. That's the key kind of summary reason: knowledge is power. So you can move from unaware of this issue to being very well aware and make better decisions for better results. This information is important because it creates a connection. The other thing that I didn't understand when I was doing the work was these products are made in communities somewhere else that I didn't really realize how they were affecting places like Cancer Alley in Louisiana, where this manufacturing is happening and the pollution is happening and how health was affected. We see it with the train that was derailed in Ohio about a year ago that was carrying vinyl chloride from vinyl products. So this connection, so we help to make this connection between supply and demand and where these things come from. A lot of times things appear and disappear in our lives and they never just appear and disappear. So it's making you think about what is this and where did this come from? Where is it going after I'm done with it? And who's affected? The third thing that it brings up is equity. Not everybody, even though we're all affected by exposures and pollution and climate change, people of color, low-income populations, and children are disproportionately impacted. So as we were working on our DEI initiatives, we have to start thinking about how this information can help us make better decisions so certain people aren't hurt first and worst. And then finally, getting back to the 2.5 trillion square feet, we are a part of a large scale sector. And we have the power to change the health of the planet if we all start making better decisions. It's an amazing opportunity to use the scale. There are things, if we all made pens, we might not be able to affect the scale of the planet, even though our pens should be made in a better way too. But there's just nothing as massive as the built environment. So those are the reasons we wanted this report to come out so people could understand this issue more and how they could take leadership.
Very good. Thank you for that big picture overview, Gina. Gina, before we get into maybe some specifics, maybe a little bit more about the study you mentioned, maybe 36 specific properties. Maybe, yeah, just a little bit more about that source of information for the study.
Yeah, we worked with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to look at 36 projects that were funded between 2019 and 2020 through tax credits and other sorts of funding. It represents about 2,100 units and over 2 million square feet. We're not naming what projects or what architects. So all of that, we aggregated it. It's anonymized. So this isn't about shame or blame. This is all about this amazing information for taking leadership. And we looked at five categories of products, you know, flooring, countertop, paint, et cetera, and about 600 products that were used.
Wow. Pretty good. Ask a question about those type of products. What tends to be maybe more harmful, if you will, for the environment versus, you know, what's preferred? But maybe the first question is, Gina, you're a scientist, you're a researcher. Did you have your hypothesis, like what percentage of products? Maybe that was the first question. Then let's get into what did the results of the study show? What type of products tend to be preferred materials? I think maybe your language versus what products have a way to go.
Yeah, good question. And I want to clarify, I'm not the scientist. I'm the translator. I work with the team to translate, you know, when they're talking about chemicals and words that have way too many letters in them. But I say, how do we make this really simple? So that's my role. And yeah, did I know what the results were going to be? Pretty much, because I was a developer for 20 years. I know what I used. I know what everybody's using. And the second reason is because Healthy Building Networks supports organizations all across the country, from huge tech firms to the largest global architects. We work with K-12 studios to healthcare. That's the other thing I want to make sure that this is really clear. This is not about Minnesota doing it in a certain right or wrong, or about affordable housing. This is just a representation, and we chose affordable housing because we know the values and the interests and the innovation that affordable housing, especially Minnesotans, and yeah, I'm biased, I'm from Minnesota, but I know the people here. I know the people here will want to do better if they know ways to do it. And so that's a little bit about why I kind of knew how it was going to turn out. Because yeah, luxury vinyl tile, luxury in quotes, PLAM countertops, carpeting, the different insulations, that's what's available on the market. So that's the other thing we want people to know, that we're given certain products by the market, by manufacturers, and here's your palette to choose from. And many of those products, and some are lower cost, first costs, as we like to say in real estate, because it doesn't think about the externalized costs of health and cleanup costs, like what's happening in Ohio and other kinds of costs that gets externalized through taxpayers cleaning it up and people's health and their bills. So this idea that, did I know what was going to be used? Sure. Did I know the exact percentage? No, but I still hang out with real estate folks from national to local. So what it came out as, so we used our informed materials modeling approach. So our scientists have come up with a way to, they created a methodology to look at what are the chemicals and materials that are used throughout the entire life cycle. From extraction, manufacture, install, of course, the use case, and then end of life. So we look at the whole. So that's different than a lot of the certifications or sometimes the green building standards often look at just the use case, just the occupant, and don't look to see, oh, oopsie, was it made of fossil fuels? Or my gosh, what was happening during installation? Are the adhesives or sealants or things that the installers were exposed to, are they bad? And then what happens at the end of life? So our data looks at the comprehensive view versus what I call most people look at the keyhole view of what's happening just when the units get there. So we created this way to create easy guidance called informed, and it's based on red being the worst, orange a little bit better. Once you get to yellow, light green and dark green, you're doing really, really good. So we always say step up from red, try to prefer yellow and green, and we can profoundly impact the planet if we're choosing yellow and green things. So about 70% of all the products we looked at were in the red and orange ranking. So not so great. About 15% were in the yellow and light green and dark green, so the better stuff. And about 15%, the specs were written so poorly, or they weren't clear, that we didn't know. So my guess is those 15% would probably spread in the same kind of ranking or the same percentages as the other. So we are profoundly using some of the worst in class products that are carcinogens, mutagens, persistent, bioaccumulative, made from fossil fuel. So as we're working on our energy strategies to stop using fossil fuels to heat our buildings, we're turning around and using plastic building products made from fossil fuels to build our buildings. So it's the fastest or one of the fastest growth sectors for the fossil fuel industry are building products. It's the second largest use of plastics behind packaging. Packaging is starting to shrink because people are paying attention to the straws and the bags and the food containers, but it's not for building products. It's a huge growth market, and products are often by manufacturers, they are advertised as healthy, or they're called things like nature's floor carpet or something like that, missing the fact that, well, yeah, maybe it is nature's floor, but it was a fossil fuel. It's the floor they're talking about. And so we're making these decisions to use these products based on kind of what's available to us. And sometimes advertisement that isn't as honest or clear as it should be. And so our goal is to learn, okay, what is this information? What are we using? And how can we work together to think about ways to pick different kinds of products? How can we aggregate our buying power if there is a cost difference to bring that down? how can we be more strategic about picking products that will be better for all of the life cycle people on the planet? And know that some of these products, they don't cost more. You just need to know what to ask for. So there are some easy lifts, as we see with the 15% of products already. So if all the folks were using, you know, across the board, so some might be using better products and some might be using worse, but if you already have your peers who already figured out the cost performance and use of these products, let's do that together.
Perfect. Gina, thanks for digging into that. Gina, one thing that I read, picked up in the draft report was, in the low-income housing tax credit space, there's the state's qualified allocation plans, and looks to be, and we see either some requirements or some scoring around quote-unquote green components. It looks like there is a little bit of a correlation maybe between these green requirements and maybe the scoring or the green, yellow, orange, red. Can you talk about that correlation you saw?
Yeah, there are all of the major green building standards, which our team supports in different ways and advises kind of as their science advisor. You know, safer products are a little newer to the scene compared to energy efficiency and water conservation devices. So in the last 8 to 10 years, you've seen some growth in LEED and Living Building Challenge and Enterprise and on how to select better products. And most of those tend to look at lists of chemicals or certain chemicals. And it's been challenging for everybody to kind of participate and find that information. Because most of the time, like the vast majority of the time, you can't even find that information for manufacturers. We can, because we look at patents and we look at all kinds of things. And our material scientists know what these products are made of. So in the efforts in the last handful of years, decade maybe, there has been growth and influence and improvements because of these standards. So it's a really great approach to being able to make awareness and incentivize, because you get points oftentimes for that. And so several of the major green building standards are starting to use our red to green ranking, because it is a much easier way to approach making these decisions when you're not a scientist like me and like my peers in the real estate world. And because we look at the whole life cycle. So WELL is piloting kind of an integrative design credit in their residential rating. So they've already adopted that. And we are working with the other ones to start using Informed as a materials modeling approach, so that people can much more easily make decisions without being a scientist.
Very good. Very good. Gina, one other part of the draft report we think about, and you already gave us some advice what people, developers can start looking around, but you mentioned different stakeholders, right? There's so many stakeholders in the real estate development process, from architects to general contractors to the funding agencies. Could you maybe just give one or two examples of how can other, you know, not just developers, but others in this ecosystem participate?
Yeah, a lot of the pressure often gets on the developer and often the architect too. And again, this is still a new idea to most when we're talking to our different audiences out there. But there are a lot of developers we're working with that are picking better products. So we cite some of those in the report to show that peers are figuring this out, cost performance and all the other questions around it. So it is possible to make these changes. A group that aren't always brought in the fold here, because it doesn't feel like they have a choice, is funders and banks. And when you look at all of the funding agencies, because we know on, especially on affordable housing, that stack of funders, you often have 15, I've done deals that had 30 funders on it. They're somewhat of a step removed, but you can think about them as an investor. What products are they investing? What products are they subsidizing? So you can kind of think about their role as, well, are they subsidizing the vinyl industry if nearly all of the projects are using vinyl products? So funders can start to think about how to educate the architects, developers, and projects teams on what might be better products. So New York, their housing preservation development group that provides funding for New York projects, requires all of their project teams, once they get funded, to learn about safer products. So Healthy Building Network team works with any project funded out of the New York HPD to provide guidance. There isn't a requirement to select this product or that product, but there is a big push around education. So all of the funders should be providing links and guidance and opportunities for workshops and information sharing. That could be a great first step in getting this knowledge out there and making sure people are selecting better things. Because all of these groups, in the end, don't want to harm people on the planet, especially those disproportionately impacted. So we appreciate McKnight Foundation, who funded this report, who wanted to understand. They have a vibrant and equitable communities program. They wanted to understand more about, well, what's happening in this realm? This is new. So what is happening here? So they've invested in learning. So that's another opportunity to engage people. Contractors. People wonder, you know, what's the role of the contractor? Well, we show in our report that there was a resolution signed with the Minneapolis Building Trades with Dan McConnell a few years ago, because contractors are not get to pick what they're installing. It's quite rare. We decide what they install. And oftentimes there's a lot of exposures happening at that level, whether you're inhaling, whether you get it on your clothes, or whether you're bringing that home to your families. And there is a link to a story that happened here in Minneapolis where carpet contractors were very ill from the exposures of the carpet they were installing. They had to go to the emergency room. They had months and months and months of dizziness and fatigue and memory loss and all kinds of things. Not often is there healthcare and other things to support. And by the way, that flooring still got installed because the city couldn't do anything about it because it wasn't quote unquote illegal. So it was student housing. But here, contractors were the reason why Dan and the trade signed this resolution for safer and healthier building products is they don't always get to choose. And they are bearing the burden. I remember a couple of years ago when we had a workshop here with affordable housers and built environment folks. Dan spoke, and there was a question earlier on about someone saying, hey, I heard you work with Google a lot. Why is Google interested in their real estate being, you know, having safer products? And they, back in the day, they had this concept that if you are employed at Google, your life will be extended by 5 years or something like that. Because of the way they support their employees, the healthier environment, the other kinds of benefits they had. And I was explaining that. And then Dan got up to speak and he said, I just came from a memorial that we have every year for contractors who have mesothelioma, who either lost their life because of lung cancer caused by asbestos exposure. And so he said, I know my workers are not going to have a longer, more healthier, more quality of life. They are being exposed. And that's important for me and for us, is what he was explaining in the contractor industry. So that's the other thing we want to think about a lot is contractors, we're setting them up for a healthier life or not. And I didn't, sad to say, back in the day, I just assumed the government, the scientists, whoever made these products, weren't making them full of stuff that made people sick. I mean, if I could buy it off the shelf, why would I think it was going to be problematic for people being exposed to it? I always say, it's like when I get on an airplane now, I buy my ticket. Nobody expects me to go look at the cockpit and check on the equipment or see if everything's ready to go. Somebody took care of that, and I trust that. Now, if there was smoke billowing out of the cockpit or a wing was on the ground, yeah, I wouldn't get in. So that part's on me. But this is where we, as a real estate community, can start demanding better, can start saying, hey, when you're advertising manufacturer for your vinyl floor, make clear this is where it comes from, fossil fuels, and that it has these other kinds of issues. So we have the opportunity to ask the questions now. We have the opportunity to lead this. And we don't have to put contractors and all other kinds of people in positions where they're going to be exposed to stuff.
Very good. Thank you for that, Gina. Gina, you just mentioned a quick story about flooring, and I will never forget ever the story about carpeting and plastic from you told on last summer, and just the amount, it far exceeds the amount of plastic straws and things like that. I know you just had a little call out on flooring, maybe in this report, maybe just a couple of highlights. I mean, what's up with flooring in the space?
Yeah, we love our flooring because we interact with it so much. It creates sort of a vibe in the room. It's either warm or not, or it's going to last and it's not. So it's very visible. So everybody is really interested compared to, you know, maybe what the conduit is between your wall and some other things. There is definitely a connection to flooring. And people are interested in, you know, the aesthetic and the durability and cost, all the things. And so often these products, as you say, are made of plastics. Now, not historic. There's a lot of products, wood and linoleum, which is making an amazing comeback, and other products that are made of more natural materials. But many of them are plastic. The stat I said last year for the folks who hadn't heard that one is, we're trying to make this visible because we think of plastic straws and those kinds of single-use materials and the volumes, and we're always surprised at those. I've been saying the built environment is hidden in plain sight. We don't have terms for single-use materials in the built environment. I'm saying that anything under 20 years should be considered a single-use material. So carpet and countertops, paint for sure. Those are often single-use materials. And the volumes, as products are used and thrown away and used and thrown away, carpet alone, the carpet industry says about 2 million tons of carpet, which is about 70% plastic made from fossil fuels. So that's 1.2 plus million tons of plastic carpet is thrown away every year. And it is more than every plastic bag, plastic water bottle, and plastic straw the U.S. throws out combined every year. That's one product. Let me say it's a product that harbors a lot of other things, too. Kids spitting up on it, and your shoes, and your dog. And so there's a lot of hygiene issues, if nothing else. But when you think about the 3 to 7 years is what we see carpet, and seven is probably for commercial and multifamily is probably the long side of that, and it's usually less than 3 years. And you'll see stats in Minnesota. We looked at how much carpet is thrown in Minnesota, and it is the same. It's the same kind of a scale that it's enormous. So if we don't start looking at the built environment and thinking about the longevity of these products and how long you want them to be in place, yeah, we have a huge waste problem because, it either gets landfilled or burned. And so that gets up into the air and the air pollution and things. And so, yeah, a lot of the flooring that we're using tends to get thrown out in short periods of time.
Gina, this has been a good plethora of information, some eye-opening information, maybe not that, people probably, like you said, probably not are aware of it, but it's good to get in front of us. Kind of our one last question for you, Gina. And you mentioned probably some of these things before, but what is the call to action with the report?
Yeah, the first is always just learn. Read it, learn about it, get your head around it, think about what are the products you're using. And we're not saying use green tomorrow. You have to use only green products. We're saying one of the biggest first things you can do with a huge impact is step up from red. Step up from those worst in class products, because those, I always say, like on your, if you relate it to food, that would be like taking candy bars off your dinner plate. We shouldn't even be discussing whether or not that should be the key thing to do. So that makes a big difference. Does it absolutely make a difference if you go from yellow to light green to dark green? Yes. But those products, once you get to yellow, you're in a pretty good spot. They are pretty darn good. There's no perfect product, I should say. There's never going to be a perfect product, and especially in today's economy. But what will happen as we eliminate the reds, the worst of the worst, it opens up the opportunity for innovation because there are absolutely manufacturers who are making things in the yellow, light green, dark green zone that they say, we're frustrated. We've made the better stuff and they're still buying the red stuff. So if we can start to purchase more and buy bigger volumes of those, if there's a cost issue, we'll be able to bring that down. So it exists, and we will not get to the innovation we need to solve the planetary health crisis, both from a toxicity and pollution standpoint. And these things take a tremendous amount of energy to make, so not from a climate. So we're saying by 2030, let's be done using red products. We're going to be working with Minnesota groups here, the real estate and built environment, in addition to the affordable housing, to say, what is our roadmap out of red? Where is it easier to step up, and where might it be more challenging? And where are groups like the Lower Sioux making this new hempcrete, you know, DEED, Department of Employment and Economic Development funded the Lower Sioux here in Minnesota to support a new wall made out of hemp, which is brilliant. Why aren't we investing in clean jobs and clean manufacturing and amazing new products like that that could really reshape the future, our health, and of the planet?
Very good. Gina, thank you so much. That's it for this episode of The Buzz House. A big thanks to Gina Saganek for joining the show today. Tell us about healthy building products and their impacts. Once again, I'm Don Bernards.
Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. For additional resources around multifamily housing, check out BakerTilly.com. If you have a suggestion for the show, email us at buildabakertilly.com. That's BUILD@BakerTilly.com. See you next time on Buzz House.